From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Have a wish sandwich?
She thinks I'm cute! I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, it is Tuesday, December 21st, 2010, the winter solstice.
Ooh, beware the solstice ghost.
I wish there was a solstice
there
ghost.
There really should be a solstice ghost. I don't know, it goes around haunting people who did not accomplish enough in the shortest day of the year.
See, I'm putting a positive spin on it, that he goes around giving people full spectrum light bulbs.
Oh, to combat their seasonal affective disorder.
Right, it's like, don't become a ghost like me.
Yes, the solstice ghost is a Jacob Marley-like fellow.
Oh, all of the winter ghosts are rather Marley-like, either yeah. Jacob or Bob, depending on where you are.
Somebody has to have done that bit where Scrooge gets visited by Bob Marley instead of Jacob Marley. I have to believe somebody has done that bit.
You know, dibs on that. We are claiming dibs on that, and we will do something with it.
Until we find that someone else has done it.
Well, if they haven't, we're calling provisional dibs.
Yeah, provisional dibs is already the frontrunner for the name of this podcast.
Yeah.
Episode. Good, let's do the business.
Okay, the business. We have 381 awesome minions, and they're all awesome, in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions.
Yeah, it's important to note, not only do we have 381 awesome minions, we have 381 minions. So there's no not awesome minions in the batch.
Right. If you look at the Venn diagram, it's just a perfect circle.
It's an O.
Go to paulandstorm.com to learn to be the Brigade of Minions. You want that.
Has anybody out there seen To Be and To Have? Let me know what you thought. I saw it. I enjoyed it, but it was a little slow.
Tell you what I did see.
What you did see?
We saw the Brotherhood of Justice.
the Brotherhood of Justice?
You heard me. You probably don't know what it is. Mrs. Storm is a big fan of Keanu Reeves.
Uh-huh.
Aren't we all? You know, aren't we all?
Yeah, of course.
Despite the fact we've had to agree to disagree about his acting ability or lack thereof.
Wait. Mrs. Storm, does she contend he is a good actor, or does she just contend that she likes to watch him perform? Because those are two separate and not necessarily overlapping elements.
Well, that's the common ground we've found. She's given up trying to defend his acting. And at this point, and it's perfectly fine. And there are plenty of movie stars that are great movie stars who aren't necessarily, in my humble opinion, actors. You know, they're good at portraying something. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly John Wayne is the example of that.
Yeah, I've kind of found what he was good at portraying and did that. That's great.
Harrison Ford, another fine example. George Clooney, many would. Well, I mean, I find George Clooney to actually be a very good actor.
Yeah,
he tends to play a George Clooney type.
Yeah, exactly. Now this particular movie, Gillian remembered it from when it was a made-for-TV movie. Kiefer Sutherland was also in it. Uh-huh. And also the guy who played the villainous rich dude from Titanic. I don't remember the actor's name. Anyway, it was
Billy Zane.
Yes, Billy Zane, of course, Billy Zane. Anyway, it was actually for one of these things pretty darn good. Just about a basically vigilante justice in Southern California. It was really something to see.
I bet it. Well, what year are we talking here? Is this young Keanu? Is this like Bill and Ted's Keanu? Is this
I think it was right before
Sweet November Keanu?
Right before Bill and Ted. So it was like 86.
Okay.
So, and right before Lost Boys as well. So it's probably the movie that got everybody, you know, the good jobs, because vigilante justice in Southern California is what you want to be doing in 1986 to get yourself the meaty roles.
Well, I'm sure I will rush right out and watch that. Did you watch it on the Netflix, or did
that,
you?
That was going to be my point about it, was that I've been recently kind of regressing, really, with Netflix. Catching up on stuff that, like, I know that Mrs. Storm doesn't want to watch necessarily in the wee hours, but, and in a double feature, I watched Krull and Dragon's Lair.
Oh, Krull is quite possibly my guiltiest of guilty pleasure movies.
It's enjoyable. That's the other thing. Like if you do the Netflix thing online, or even if you don't, you can rate the movies.
Yeah.
And a movie like Krull, you know, it's not a good movie, but it's enjoyable. So here's the question, and I pose it to you, dear listener, as well. If you're doing the ratings for this, do you do the rating based on how good you know the movie actually is, or your enjoyment
like
of
an objective or a subjective measure of quality or whatever?
I even think of it not necessarily in those terms, but yeah, there's like the quality, like Krull, you know, you couldn't give it more than 2 stars, you know, maybe not even 1, but in terms of enjoyment, not just I like it, but you feel like if someone watched it, they would enjoy it, that you would give it more stars.
Mm.
So that's sort of, it's a fine distinction between saying, you know, it's not saying I think it's a great movie, but it's saying I think people would enjoy watching this.
Right.
For a case in point, one that we did watch together was Cobra.
Ugh.
Sylvester Stallone, which had the unforgettable line, "You're the disease. I'm the cure." Yeah. I did not know that's where that came from.
The axe gangs of Southern California.
Yeah. It was basically a Dirty Harry movie, but not at all.
It was sort of everything that was awful about late 80s Shane Black influenced action movies.
Yep. And, you know, it's sort of part of the enjoyment was getting to see just that era, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been watching a lot of that dreck, I think, for that reason, you know, that it's comical. And I guess a movie like Cobra, it was, of course, imitating the much, much more successful Schwarzenegger flicks and Rambo, you know, his own movie.
Yeah, Sly Stallone.
Et cetera, et cetera. And I sort of wonder, you know, it's sort of like how grunge swept aside the pop music that went before. For those type of action flicks, I don't remember there being like a thing that swept it aside. They just sort of trickled out and died. Every once in a while, someone would try to put one out.
Yeah. That's a good question. I should know better, but nothing's coming to my head. What sort of replaced the big, dumb, loud action late 80s action movie or mid-late 80s action movie in the film pantheon? But I think you're right. I don't think anything replaced it so much as they just sort of petered out.
Yeah, I think it may have been like Jurassic Park, like special effects that did something different. Like before there was sort of a second boom in special effects.
I'd say you might be right. Sort of the Jurassic Park, Independence Day, like the summer tentpole movies.
Right.
You know, you could say Batman, you know, which sort of restarted that whole, that whole wave of, you know, not just summer blockbusters, but sort of the summer, what's the word I'm looking at? Franchise establishing or continuing tentpole movies.
But that is what the action flicks were. They may not have been continuing stories, but when a Schwarzenegger flick came out, you know, every year or so or two, you knew what you were going to get. And I guess what I'm thinking now, continuing on the special effects thing, is before they sort of advanced the ball and gave people something they couldn't see before with the special effects, they just used big explosions, you know? And they said, okay, how do we put something together that has lots of big explosions that is something you can't get on the TV. You know, yes. It doesn't come across in the sound system.
Yep.
So I'm going with that. I'm going
yeah,
with
I,
that.
I, you know what? I would buy that. I would buy that argument.
All right. Next
good,
case.
Good for you, Storm.
There we go. We can reason through anything.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really have much else written down. We did put the word out on Twitter, and I feel like we got some really good suggestions.
Yeah, there's some good ones there. Steptoe mentioned that we should talk a bit about Joko Cruz Crazy, which is coming up in a scant, at this point, what, 11 days, 12 days?
I can hardly believe that less than 2 weeks from now, I'll be floating around drinking pina coladas.
Yeah. I mean, you could be doing that. Yeah, on a very big ship in the Caribbean.
That's right. Sorry, it is not a boat. It is a ship.
It is a ship. It is an airship.
Airship.
Just made some nerds happy. We're very excited. There's been a lot of work and planning going into all of this. I mean, I don't think we're telling tales out of school or anything when we say it's not like we've been keeping it a great secret. We just haven't talked about it much. We're sort of, I don't know if co-producing is the right word.
But I think it is the right word.
I suppose, yeah. We're co-producing Joko Cruz Crazy. Like, Jonathan has been doing a lot of work, and of course it's his name on the proverbial boat. And we've been, you and I, along with our great stage manager and dungeon master, dammit Liz, have been doing a lot of sort of the groundwork of planning logistics and setting up schedules and making sure things are in line.
And our agent, of course.
And our agent Armand, who doesn't listen to this podcast, so the hell with him. But yeah, none of us have ever, of course, done anything quite like this before. We certainly run some Wootstocks, which share some similarities, but Wootstock has never gone on a moving platform, much less in an ocean.
No, they're relatively stable, at least when you add ships to the spectrum.
Yeah. It has certainly been a learning experience, but things are all pretty well falling into place. And we're very much looking forward to it. I don't know how many of you out there who listen to this are actually attending. There's nothing official about this yet, but Storm and I have talked. We would like to record one or several, podcasts, while on the ship, and hopefully possibly maybe do one of them in a public venue. Maybe we're throwing it out there. Like I say, we may or may not be able to make it happen. We certainly don't have an official space for it, but there are places where such things can be done. And we hope to make that happen. We hope to bring a lot of our good friends on as guests, our good famous friends.
I think it would even be fun to do a series of almost mini podcasts, you know, like to even aim to sit down with each of the other performing participants just to get, 5 minutes, get the average of the podcast length down a little bit and just kind of put them out or have them as segments.
I don't think that would be fun at all.
Well, that's because you're not a very fun person.
I'm just saying that to be contrarian. I don't think that's a bad idea at all.
And you're very fun, Paul.
I'm breaking your cakes, as Buddy Valester, the cake boss, would say. So there's that, and so we won't dwell on that too much, because you're either going on the cruise and you're going to see what's going to happen, or you're not going on the cruise and it's kind of like someone talking about the cool thing that they get to do that you don't. And we don't want to be that guy.
Well, no, we do want you to wish you were on the cruise, because we want you to join us on a ship somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Point taken. But you know what I mean.
Sure. Now we can go holiday-like or esoteric-like.
I don't give a crap. You pick.
I'm going to esoteric first, because no one expects that.
Because that's the old idea. Esoteric before a holiday, never sicker, however that goes. Anyway.
Yeah, horiday. This is from New Onyx Isle, who asks, what is your, or do you have a favorite language that you don't speak?
Ooh.
And I do, but you go ahead if you would care for some time to think about that.
That I don't speak? I would probably say Japanese.
Ah.
I don't know much about Japanese as a language. I know it is a very sort of their alphabet certainly is descriptive, mm-hmm. but with their picto character graphs or whatever you would call them, I just find it a fascinating. I mean, I'm also equally fascinated in a non-investigatory way with Japanese culture.
Sure.
Because it is so, for lack of a better term, alien to what I am used to.
Well, and you're such a huge manga fan.
I love the manga. I actually do enjoy manga. My daughter has actually gotten into manga lately, my older daughter, and has gotten me into said same by association. I find Japan and Japanese culture in general fascinating, right down to the language, which just sounds neat to me. And again, it's so different than English in so many fundamental ways from my rudimentary understanding of it. It's not like speaking, a romance language where you have sort of a basic set of rules that you all operate by, and there's little variations here and there, but you can sort of understand most of them.
So it's for you the language equivalent of what everyone hopes and imagines going through a black hole would be.
Yeah, exactly. I think at the other side of the black hole, it's pretty much just Tokyo.
I think you're right.
There's a lot of used penny vending machines,
mm-hmm.
and salarymen, mindlessly toiling through their miserable lives. And there's a whole shitload of neon.
Wow. Call the physicists and the astrophysicists and the cosmologists.
Yeah.
They can stop.
That's right. Yeah,
we can
point our radio telescopes elsewhere, for we have solved this mystery.
Yeah, just point them at Japan. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, point them at Japan is another frontrunner for the title of this podcast. Storm, what's yes. your language you do not speak that is your favorite?
This is based entirely by how it sounds and a sense of mystery, much as for you. It's the Japanese language is a portal to a grand and almost incomprehensible realm.
Mm-hmm.
Little different. It's Portuguese.
Ah.
I do not speak Portuguese, but it's the type of thing where instead of being something that's totally, entirely, crazily different from what you're used to, it's that thing that you hear it in a song, or you hear it spoken, or even if you see it written, you look at it, and depending on what time of day it is, what position the sun is in, how much sleep you've had, you'll be like, is that Spanish or Italian, or is that English? And I'm just not mm-hmm. hearing it right.
Yep.
And of course, the girl from Ipanema is the very kind of prototypical example of that, where she's singing not the English part, obviously, but
right.
in the Portuguese, and I find it to be very beautiful and sensual, and it's almost like you feel you understand it, or that you know it, yet you don't at all.
Yep.
So
it's familiar, and then it takes that slight left turn.
Yeah. So it's welcoming. It's not jarring.
It's around the corner from familiar.
Around the corner from familiar, and there's another.
Yeah, except I was trying too hard, so no, you don't nominate that.
You did have the here was, comes one tune.
Yep, you could see me winding up my arm like Dizzy Dean.
Yeah, as you often do.
Yes, as I often do when I'm about to say a hilarious little bit, my arm just starts windmilling like a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
You were on the last road trip. God, you probably still have scabs on your hands from being in the van doing that.
I do. I don't know why I was doing it in such closed quarters, but it's just, you got to stick with tradition. Clunk. Ow.
All right. I'm going with, I'm sure we've talked about this before, but it's the holidays and it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Mario Spangetti has asked about our favorite and least favorite Rankin Bass joints.
Uh-huh.
And I think we've already agreed to this years ago that Heat Miser is the greatest thing that
you're without a Santa Claus. Yes.
Yeah. I don't even care that it has anything to do with Santa Claus.
You know what? I'm going to speak a little out of turn here.
Okay.
You know, having just rewatched Year Without a Santa Claus last week, it's not very good. I mean, none of them are very good, but even in a Rankin-Bass scale,
yeah,
which is a very, is grading on a heavy curve.
It's a wangly scale.
It's a wangly scale to begin with. And Year Without a Santa Claus is, you know, when you take Heat Miser and Snow Miser out of the equation, by the way, it is Snow Miser, not Cold Miser. Thank mm-hmm. you very much. when you take them out of the equation, and even if you leave them in the equation, it's just not a very good show. Everybody has the love for Heat Miser and Snow Miser because they're the catchiest damn little songs. So I am recasting my... Uh-oh. Storm has lost CPU power.
I'm back.
He is back. Have you lost what you were recording?
No, that it just stopped where it was. And what did I suck?
Are you still recording again, by the way?
I'm recording now. Yeah.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure how one-sided this conversation was.
Only a little. There was a little of you going, uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Okay. So anyway, I was about to say that I am recasting my vote.
Okay.
And I am I'm splitting my vote, the Rankin-Bass that I have seen in the past couple of years. That is a favorite. I got to go back to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Sure.
And of one that I have not seen in at least 5 years, and it's probably edges the other one out, is Rudolph's Shiny New Year.
I remember that one.
That's the one with the baby New Year with the big ears.
Yeah, that's great.
And the whale with the clock in his tail. Eon, that was his name. Eon the whale with the clock in his tail. And they met up with Ben Franklin and the old clanky knight going around the archipelago.
I always loved crap like that, where they would pull historical figures into, mm-hmm. you know, Rudolph or Magnum P.I., whatever, you know, just that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, when Ben Franklin went up in the helicopter and he's like, oh, I invented one of these, but it didn't work. You know, it was funny.
Hanging out with Higgins and stuff.
Yeah, those two. God, it's not surprising.
I can't believe nobody teamed them up in a buddy cop comedy before then.
I think we have our next big action flick.
I think we do. We're just birthing all kinds of good projects here on this tonight's podcast.
Well, that's because we skipped a week. We were on the Twit.
We skipped almost 2 weeks, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, we were on the Twit podcast, which I guess they're going to be airing coming up. We were on that with Jonathan and John Hodgman. And
yeah,
of course.
Go ahead. Nope, I was just chiming in, but our connection is a little funky tonight, where like usually I can hear you a lot better, even when we are interrupting one another, and tonight it is more difficult.
Huh, it must be a setting or something.
It could be. We got the interrupt off.
I gotta say, I don't have a worst or a least favorite of the Rankin-Basses, and I'll grant you, I have not seen A Year Without Santa Claus in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
My fallback position is any of the ones that have Bing Crosby do the little narration.
Did he ever do one?
Do I have the wrong crooner?
Fred Astaire.
Fred Astaire. I'm sorry. whatever. They all sang, didn't they?
Yeah, they all sang. Which the heck one was
no,
that?
Or was it Bing Crosby?
I don't know. Burl Ives did Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yep.
Fred Astaire did. Oh God, did he do?
I'm going to the internet. Hold on.
Did he do the one about that was about Santa and his origin story? No, I'm pretty sure that was that one. Yeah,
the young Santa.
Yeah, we put one foot in front of the other with Mickey Rooney as Santa.
Was that Fred Astaire?
I'm pretty sure Fred Astaire was the narrator for that one.
Okay, well, we're geezing. Let's move on.
Yeah, okay. I was going to ask you something, and now I have completely lost it, so I'm going to scroll up and down our little Twitter feed here until I find something that works. Storm, your new guitar. We never really announced.
Oh!
You have a new guitar. Model and info, and somebody says, wants to know what happened with the candy cane. I don't know. This is Brett Glass asking this, and I have no idea what he's referring to because I'm forgetting.
Atlanta, the fire.
Oh, yeah. No, that was something. You know what? We're not really at liberty to discuss it, but it was.
Well, we've been told in no uncertain terms that we should not.
Yeah. Candy Flame. Candy Flame was something. See if you can find somebody who is there who's willing to talk about it.
By now, someone, I don't know, maybe WikiLeaks has, hacked someone's account to get the pictures out there.
Yeah.
But I don't know. People were so surprised that I don't think they even. Most people wouldn't have thought to get
I was surprised. I can't believe we did it and we threw it together so quickly.
Yeah. Well, and we've already said too much.
Yeah. Okay.
The new guitar. It's fantastic. It is a Martin. It is their grand concert body, which is not like I used to have before it was ripped off, a dreadnought body. And this one it's a little smaller, but it has a little brighter sound. It's a beautiful sounding instrument. Really, thing about like a new instrument, I don't know if it's true for other types of instruments besides like stringed instruments, but it brings other stuff out of you. Like when you play a new guitar, it just has a sound and a feel, and you find your fingers just sort of start going places, and that triggers your mind. Mm. Nothing useful's come out of this yet because I haven't spent a ton of time playing it, but it's worked out very well, and the folks in the airlines will have to punch me in the head before I will allow them to take my guitar from me.
That's your boots.
Yeah, we have a couple of flights on United coming up, and they're particularly bad. Unless it is a stroller, they will not allow you to do the gate check thing.
Yeah, that's gonna be a fun little thing.
So if anyone has a baby that they could lend me,
or perhaps a guitar shaped baby.
Oh yeah, if it's playable, that's even better. I say it because I don't want to say he or she.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the guitar and the baby and everything to do with that.
Yeah. What else is going on? Excuse me, he said, yawning at his own boringness.
Huh. Well, I have other notes about the holidays. In particular, Ken Plume and a few others have asked, Ken just said carols, which could be open.
Didn't we talk about that on the last podcast or at some point about favorite carols or?
We may have. Yeah, I know we did, because I'm not going to defend it now. It's under attack, but Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the war on Wonderful Christmas Time is in full scale. Heck with this war on Christmas. War on Wonderful Christmas Time.
I think I am the last defender of this song. And it much as with Crawl, I know it's not a good song, but damn it, I like hearing it.
Yeah.
And I know it's not good, and I don't care. I don't care. Just because something isn't good doesn't mean you can't enjoy it and that it's not respectable.
Just because something's not good doesn't mean it's not good.
Yes, exactly. So all of you holiday caroling snobs out there.
All the haters.
All you haters. Bump, 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 bump. Bow, wow, wow. Bump, 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 bump. Bow, wow, wow. That's all I got to say. Now, on the other hand, you can take Dominic the Donkey and shove him up the moon's ass.
Diggity jig. Ee-aw.
That's just cheap, all right? That's just cheap. What's that got to do with Christmas? Nothing.
It's Dominic, though.
Yeah. But I'm a sucker for anything with the melody, you know? Like, I think we talked about Silent Night as being one of the most beautiful songs, period. And then especially as a carol. Be it English or German. Oh, Holy Night is one. And again, as you know, very close to atheists, brought up Jewish guy, that song just gets to me. There's the chord change and the melody on the fall on your knees part. It's just like, wow, I want to eat bread. You know, bread is so good.
Wait, you're talking about Oh, Holy Night now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
I missed the transition there for a second. I thought you were still talking about Silent Night for a second. I was like, wait, there's no fall on your knees in Silent Night?
No.
That would be very cool, though.
Huh. I think we have a mashup possibility.
Mayhaps.
Anyway, Are there any villainous Carols in Paul Saborin's world?
It's nothing original, but Grandma got run over by a reindeer.
I
won't dwell on that because that's hardly original. Up on a Housetop, I have always despised.
Yeah, it's kind of a flaccid song.
It's the sob sister of of Christmas carols, I think.
So were there like carol pushers, you know? Like you picture Tin Pan Alley and all the songsters. And
it was like Tin Pan Alley crossed with Santa's Workshop, basically a bunch of elves sitting around.
Yeah, but it was like snow.
Churning out Christmas carols.
Yeah, in New York, and they had like fake cotton snow. It was the Carol District. It was a few blocks down from Tin Pan Alley.
Yeah.
But yeah, there'd be like song pushers, and whoever had that click, click, click song, I guess, just had a really good marketing, a street team.
They had an in with the Albee organization, managed to get it on the stage at the Palace with what's her name, Jenny Lind, singing it or something.
Yeah,
Totally went all vaudeville on you because I was reading my vaudeville book the other night. So every once in a while, I have to throw in ridiculously obscure references.
Hey, just as I'm keeping wonderful Christmas time alive single-handedly, you are the spirit of vaudeville.
You know what? Speaking of that,
yeah,
here is a question for the internet, because I, to date, have had no luck. I may have mentioned this long ago on the podcast. I have this book called American Vaudeville, which was written in the very early 40s, I believe. And it's just sort of a one guy's recollection of vaudeville acts and such. And several times in the book, he makes reference to someone chewing on bumber jiff. That's one word, bumber, B-U-M-B-E-R, jiff, G-I-F-F.
Oh, that was a guy.
No, it's lowercase.
Bumber jiff.
No, not bumber jiff. Multiple references, you know, not like every page, but, you know, three or four times across the book referring to someone chewing on bumber jiff. This word does not exist on the internet that I can find. Type it into Google. You will see. And, you know, I'll do it right now because I'll probably prove myself wrong. But the last time I typed it into Google, nothing came up. So I am now running a search for bumber jiff.
Wow.
Nothing on Google.
That blows my mind, because if it were to appear that often in a book like that, it had to have been something that was very common.
Yeah, I mean, it could be like a hay, some straw,
right, or a type of weed or tobacco, or
some sort of proto gum before flavors and bubble gum were invented.
I think we need to, you dear listener, need to tell us. This might be our audience participation. Maybe that in the Carol thing. What's bumber jiff? What was it?
What is bumber jiff? Both, you know, see if you can actually find it somewhere, the actual definition of it. And if not, what do you think it should be? Maybe draw a picture.
People love drawing pictures. Yes, send them on in.
Maybe a recipe.
A recipe.
Thank
for the
you, Mushmouth.
Gyps.
Yeah, maybe it's something Mushmouth ate. Well, on the Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids.
Well, what's bumber shoot? Let's break this word down. Like bumber. What's a bumber? What?
Let's just run a search for bumber on the Google, because nothing is more fascinating radio than listening to people look shit up.
Because, like, maybe the bumber jiff is what's left over after you process the bumber shoot.
I can find it in the Urban Dictionary. Now I have to go to Merriam-Webster.
Like the wheat and the chaff.
Yeah.
There's the shoot and the jiff.
the shoot and the jiff is the name of this episode.
How's it spelled, bumber jiff?
Bumber, B-U-M-B-E-R, excuse me, one, B-U-M-B-E-R, GIF, G-I-F-F, and that's all one word.
So it could be bumber gif.
It could be. It's certainly not in Merriam-Webster. Let's see if bumber is. Nope.
This so is an etymological mystery.
Maybe somebody's punking me. Maybe it's a long con.
History is punking you.
Yeah. So anyway, there's smarter people than I out there. That's not hard. That's not exactly a controversial statement, but you know, if somebody can actually find out what bumber jiff is, or better yet, send me some.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
I think we've found knowledge tonight.
We have.
And I'm content that I'm content in our newfound knowledge.
Yeah, as am I.
We'll have drawings and Bumber Jeff later. But for now, let's bask in the knowledge.
and a very Merry Christmas to all of you out there who celebrate Christmas. And even if you don't celebrate it, the day is still going to happen. And we hope that particular day is merry for you, as all the rest of them should be. Go ahead.
Oh, and I'm going to say happy holidays, too, because, you know, that's fine to have holidays, too. And Merry Christmas as well.
Yes. A lovely Boxing Day to you all. Saturnalia.
Yep.
Kwanzaa.
Bumblejiff
is yes. Bumblejiff is a holiday, maybe
that you can chew on. Yes,
it is worth mentioning as the new year start. Oh, go ahead. What's that?
Oh, a Bumblejiff, the chewable holiday.
You said that in just the exact right.
Thank
voice.
You. That was the call up and
that
down.
Was, that
the,
was your.
Carol, the Carol District.
That was your Christmas present to me, is what that was right there.
It was more knowledge.
As the new year starts, we have a batch of shows coming. Obviously, the cruise, which we have mentioned. If you're not on it yet, you can still sign up. Go to JocoCruiseCrazy.com. That's happening January 2nd through 8th. Then, January 20th, we're at the Great American Music. These dates upcoming are all with Jonathan Colton. On the 20th at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco, always a grand time. 21st at Largo in Los Angeles, a similar grand time. The 22nd at the Soiled Dove Underground in Denver. And then on the 28th, we are at the, where are we? Oh, the Rex Theater in Pittsburgh. Jonathan's going to have the full band at that show. And then on the 31st, we're at the World Cafe Live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Lots of other stuff coming up, too. You can go to paulandstorm.com to find out what that is.
Also go to paulandstorm.com to learn how to become part of the Brigade of Minions, closing in on 400 strong. That's amazing.
Yep.
And I'm Storm.
And I'm Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average.
Strudel? Von Toasten?
Go do things.
Hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the Donkey, jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey, la, 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 la. Santa's got a little friend, his name is Dominic, the cutest little donkey, you'll never see him kick. When Santa visits his paisans with Dominic, he'll be. Because the reindeer cannot climb the hills of Italy. Hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the donkey. Jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la. Bells around his feet and presents on the sled. Hey, look at the Mayor's Derby on top of Dominic's head. A pair of shoes for Louis and a dress for Josephine. The label on the inside says they're made in Brooklyn. Hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the donkey. Jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la. Children sing and clap their hands and Dominic starts to dance. They talk Italian to a man he even understands. Kumbaras and kumbaras do they dance a darandel. When Santa Nicola comes the town and brings Ojo Charil. Hey, jing-a-dee-jing. It's Dominic the donkey, jing-a-dee-jing. The Italian Christmas donkey. La, la, la.
Oh, 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 oh